Om sahana vavatu, sahanao bhunaktu, sahavirdyan karavavahai, tejasvi navadhi tamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Very good. Welcome back. And today we begin our study of the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Dhyana Yoga. And before introducing it properly, why don't we begin, as always, with some chanting. And the slides are available on our website if you'd like to print out a copy for yourself. We'll begin. Repeat after me. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Anashrita Karma Phalam, Anashrita Karyam karma karoti aha, karyam karma karo. Sasanyasi cha yogi cha, sasanyasi cha yogi. Nanyaragnir na cha kriyaha, nanyaragnir na cha. Yam sanyasamiti prahur, yam sanyasamiti prahur. Yogam tam vidhi pandava, yogam tam vidhi pandava. Nahyasanyastasankalpo, nahyasanyastasank. Yogi bhavati kashchana, yogi Harurukshor munir yogam, har karma karana muchate, karma ka yoga rudhasya tasyaiva, yoga rudhasya shama karana muchate, shama karana yadahi nendri arteshu, yadahi nendri na karma swanushajjate, na karma swanushajj. Sarva sankalpa sanyasi, sarva sankalpa sanyasi. Yoga rudhastarochate, yoga udharedatmanatmanam, udharedatmanatmanam avasadayet, natmanam atmaiva hyatmano bandhur, atmaiva hyatmano, atmaiva ripuratmanah, atmaiva ripurat bandhuratmatmanastasya, bandhuratmatmanas yenatmaivatmanajatah, yenatmaivatmana anatmanastu shatrutve, anatmanastu shat varte tatmaiva shatruvata, avte tatmaiva shat jatatmana prashantasya, jatatmana prashant paramatma samahitah, paramatma shitoshna sukadukeshu, shitoshna sukadu tatamanapamhanayoho, tatamanapamhan jnana vijnana triptatma, jnana vijnana kutasto vijatendriyaha, kutasto vijatendriyaha yukta hit yuchate yogi, yukta hit yuchate samaloshtashma kanchanaha, samaloshtashma suhrin mityar yuda sina, suhrin mitrar yuda madhyastadvesha bandhushu, madhyastadvesha sadhu shvapicha papeshu, sadhu shvapicha pa samabuddhir vishishyate, samabuddhir yogi unjita satatam, yogi unjita atmanam rahasi sthitaha, atmanam rahasi ekakiyata chittatma yaikakiyat nirashirha parigraha nirashirha parigraha. Very good. So there we have the opening passages of chapter 6, which is on meditation, called Dhyana Yoga, following chapter 5 on sannyasa, which we just completed last week. Before we plunge into this chapter, it's nice to get an overview. And what we've done here for many years now is to use this English translation for the sake of getting an overview. So here we can chant the verses in summary and get the meaning of chapter 6. One thing I'd like to point out before we chant this English version is that the chapter very unusually begins with a lengthy passage which is carried over from chapter 5. Chapter 5, the previous chapter on sannyasa, you'll find that the first 9 verses of chapter 6 is still talking about chapter 5. And you'll also find at the end of the chapter is a new subject matter introduced by Arjuna's question at the very end of the chapter. What about the person who falls away from the practice of yoga and meditation? So we'll see all of that as we chant. So first verse, you can listen and repeat, then we'll chant together. The Blessed Lord said, the Blessed Lord said, those who fulfill their duties here, those who fulfill their duties, not impelled by the fruits of work, not impelled by the fruits, such yogis are renunciates, such yogis are not those who merely forsake deeds, not those who merely forsake. We'll chant together. When they are no longer attached to objects or experience, giving up all other pursuits, in yoga they have mastery. A yogi whose mind is fulfilled by this wisdom, by knowing God, looks the same way on everyone, enemies, friends, sinners and saints. A yogi in deep solitude, whose mind and body are controlled, free from attachment and desire, should meditate upon the self, withdrawing to a wholesome place, neither too lofty nor too low, making a firm seat for oneself, cushioned by grass, deer, skin and cloth, fixing the mind on a single point, sense and thought, movements all restrained, seated there one should meditate, for purity of mind and heart, head, neck and body held erect, remaining steady, motionless, gazing toward the tip of the nose, looking not at anything else, the yogi meditating thus, whose mind is always well controlled, attains nirvana, perfect peace, in a state of union with me, like a lamp in a windless place, does not flicker, the same is true, for yogis whose mind are controlled, meditating upon the self, when their thoughts have finally ceased, restrained by meditation strong, seeing the self with watchful in the self they remain content, having attained that lofty state, no greater gain can they describe. Thus established they will remain, unshaken even by grave pain. So bit by bit withdraw your mind, firmly grasping the intellect, Fix your mind on the self alone, thinking not of anything else. Those who always meditate thus easily gain the highest bliss. They see the self in everything and see everything in the self. Those who perceive me everywhere and perceive everything in me, constantly abiding in me, such yogis are the best of all. Arjuna said, O Krishna, my mind wanders much, its stubborn hand impassioned too. I find it so hard to control, like trying to restrain the wind. The Blessed Lord said, O Arjuna, it's hard indeed to restrain a wandering mind, but with practice and detachment, you can bring it under control. Arjuna said, those who from yoga fall away before they gain perfection here, do they not then become lost souls, stranded like isolated clouds? The Blessed Lord said, not here nor in their later lives would their efforts ever be lost, because no one who strives for God shall to misfortune fall again. They might go to heavenly worlds and dwell in peace for countless years, or be reborn in a pious home. Such a birth here is rare. Whatever wisdom they once held will be regained in later lives. Then they shall continue again for perfection to further strive. The yogi, when cleansed of all sins by effort and restraint of mind, gains perfection through many births, lastly reaching the goal supreme. And there we have in brief the content of chapter 6, which we'll spend the next several weeks studying. You noticed that it began not by talking about meditation, which is a little odd, because you would expect that a chapter on meditation should begin by talking about meditation. But as I mentioned a few moments ago, the opening topic is actually carried over from chapter 5, the previous chapter in Sannyasa. And in last week's class, we also observed, if you remember, that the last couple of verses in chapter 5 seemed to belong to chapter 6. They were talking about meditation. So we see, we can call it some fuzziness at the boundary between the two chapters, the material from chapter 5 kind of crossing the boundary into chapter 6, and some of the material from chapter 6 found in advance in chapter 5. If you ask, why does this happen? Perhaps it's evidence of how the Mahabharata, remembering that the Bhagavad Gita is a portion of this 100,000 verse Mahabharata, which was carried on for century after century, both through oral traditions and later through writing it down. And do you think it's possible that a few verses got out of order in that process? If you, what was it, in the last class I made this observation. If you had 100,000 of anything, could you keep them organized all the time? Look at the few, whatever things we have. We have a hard time keeping those few things organized. If you had 100,000 things, to keep that organized would be an immense task. And not only for you to keep it organized, but then for you to pass it on to your children, for them to keep it organized, for your children to pass it on to their children and keep it organized. You see, the miracle it is that we have received the Mahabharata in the wonderful condition it is. When I say wonderful, it could There are a few things which are a little odd every here and there, but by and large, that 100,000 verse poem is a miracle of, in human literature. So when we see a few little things that are out of place, we shouldn't be surprised at all. So, therefore, we're going to begin our study of chapter 6, continuing our subject matter for the first 9 verses, the subject matter of chapter 5 continuing. So let's get started. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Anashrita Karma Palam, Anashrita Karyam Karma Karotiyaha, Karyam Karma Karotiyaha. Sasanyasi cha yogi cha, sasanyasi cha yogi cha, nanyaragnir na chakriyaha, nanyaragnir na chakriyaha. All right. Anashvata karma palam karyam karma karotiyaha, sasanyasi, sa yogi, saha, saha, that person is a sanyasi, saha, yogi cha, that person is a yogi. Who are we talking about? It begins, one who anashritaha. Ashrita means depending. Anashritaha, without depending, without dependence. Without dependence on what? Karma palam. Without depending on the fruits of one's action. Karyam karma karoti yaha, yaha, one who karoti does what? Karyam karma, whatever karma, whatever actions which are karyam, which you're supposed to do, required actions. So whoever does required actions without depending on results. Gee, does that sound a little bit like karma yoga? It is. That's one of the main teachings of karma yoga, to act without dependence on the result. Notice we've said without depending. Often it's said without expecting results, but we've kind of sarcastically remarked, only a fool would act without expecting results, right? It's natural to expect results, which means when you put a pot on the stove, you expect it to get hot, right? If you didn't expect it to get hot, would you put the pot on the stove? You get the point. The word expectation here is misleading. It just is a confusing word. So instead of saying without expecting results, because to expect results is normal, without depending on the results is really what we're after here. When we say depending on results, usually when we do an action, when we do something, we're looking for a result, and our happiness is in some measure dependent on getting that result. This is the problem of attachment. When our contentment depends on anything external, there is attachment. So here we're talking about attachment to karma palam, the results of an action. But one who, according to Sri Krishna here, one who does one's required actions, karyam karma, but does so anashritaha, without dependence, karma palam, on the fruits of one's actions, that person, saha sannyasi, that is a sannyasi. Saha yogi, that is a yogi. Huh? First of all, yogi here means karma yogi, right? That's our context. So that person is a sannyasi and that person is a karma yogi. Is Sri Krishna trying to confuse us here? He's equating, very deliberately equating sannyasa and karma yoga. In fact, didn't we see this starting with chapter 4? And certainly in the last chapter, we saw some equivalence between sannyasa and karma yoga. And we saw that especially in chapter 5 when we identified the 5 different kinds of sannyasa. And since this verse is making several references to those 5 different levels or kinds of sannyasa, allow me to put them back up on the board, serve as a good reminder for us and help us make sense of this verse. So when we studied chapter 5, and we're still studying the material of chapter 5, even though it's chapter 6, we identified five different meanings for sannyasa. Sannyasa means renunciation, but renunciation can have different meanings, different levels, as it were. And so first we called it, I don't know, I'm going to use some Sanskrit terminology to be a little bit more specific. Kevala karma sannyasa. Kevala, mere. The mere renunciation of action. The mere renunciation of action is the dropout. The person who's basically too lazy to get a job, doesn't want to work, person who just tries to get on whatever way they can. I don't know if they do it on welfare or they live in a cardboard box, whatever they choose to do. They don't want to work. They're lazy. This is the dropout. And then, I don't know, I'm kind of making up these terms in Sanskrit just because it's a little bit more precise. Viddhi sannyasi. Or let's call it viddhi sannyasa. When you take sannyasa as a lifestyle according to viddhi traditional rules. So the second one is a person who has taken through the rituals, has become a sannyasi, has given up other worldly activities and has devoted himself or herself exclusively to spiritual things. This is the typical sannyasi. Then third, we talked about, karma, pala. I'll use all Sanskrit terms. Since we've already seen this, and I used a lot of English terms, I'll use all Sanskrit terms today. Karma, pala, tyaga. Tyaga also means renunciation. Good call. Karma, pala, sannyasa is fine, but karma, pala, tyaga is a more common expression. Tyaga, the renunciation of karma, pala. In fact, that's what we're just talking about. Not that you renounced the karma, pala, because when you cook lunch, eating lunch is karmapala, right? So it's not exactly the karmapala we're renouncing, but rather the dependence on karmapala that we're renouncing, which is what we saw in the first part of this verse, and which is one of the main tenets of karma yoga. Then we saw, I'm not sure what Sanskrit terms to use here. I'm at a loss for a simple Sanskrit expression to express a fairly complex idea. I can't come up with 2-3 Sanskrit words that really encompass it. We said when we recognize that whatever gifts we've been given, whatever power, whatever capacity we've been given, there are several ways of understanding Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. To give, to offer everything to Ishvara, is Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. One aspect of Ishvara Arpana Buddhi means to recognize that whatever talents, skills, powers, and resources we have, they're all given by Bhagavan. Our ability to even walk and talk and think are given by Bhagavan. To recognize all of this is metaphorically then to offer all of this to Bhagavan, which is another major tenet of karma yoga. We said several times that karma yoga includes a large number of teachings. These are two of the main teachings of karma yoga. And then we come to the last of them, and we said, ahankara tyaga. Tyaga, giving up one's ahankara, not in a sense of pride, but in a very fundamental sense. Giving up the sense of individuality. We also discussed this one. Kartratva tyaga, giving up the sense that I am an agent of action, I'm in control, I'm doing it. This is really the stage of enlightenment where we realize that my true nature is Satchidananda Atma, pure consciousness. And as pure consciousness, I don't do anything at all. We've had this discussion in both chapters 4 and 5. To recognize your true nature as pure consciousness, and further recognize that as pure consciousness, you don't do anything at all, but rather all actions are done by body, mind, senses, by nature, all of which are not you. This is a fifth kind of sannyasa, fifth kind of renunciation, renunciation of ahankara, individuality, a renunciation of kartratva, agency. And this is the kind of sannyasa that we've said is the same as enlightenment. Now, we've just reviewed, well, maybe a little different language, the five kinds of sannyasa we discussed at great length in a prior chapter. It'll really help us make sense out of why Sri Krishna says, sa sannyasi cha yogi cha. That person is a sannyasi and yogi. Who is? One who is anashrataha karmapalam. Isn't that talking about this fellow? The one who has given up dependence on karmapala. Anashrataha karmapalam. Sri Krishna says, that person is a sannyasi. Yeah. Tyaga, that person has renounced something. That's in that sense. He is not saying that that person is a sannyasi in the sense that person's gone through rituals of renunciation. It's not a reference to any of the other four. When Sri Krishna says, sa sannyasi, that person is a sannyasi, he's referring to the fact that that person has indeed renounced. That person is a renouncer. Not a renouncer of worldly activities, but rather a renouncer of dependence on karmapala. Sa sannyasi, sa yogi cha. That person is a karma yogi. This particular kind of sannyasa is karma yoga. Now you can understand why Sri Krishna says, sa sannyasi cha yogi cha. That person is a renouncer and a karma yogi. Na niragnihi na cha akriyaha. But the renouncer, he says, sa sannyasi sa yogi. That person is a sannyasi and yogi. Na niragnihi. But the one who is niragnihi, one who doesn't have fire, and obviously it's a reference to ritual fire, one who doesn't do Vedic rituals. One who doesn't do Vedic rituals is niragnihi. So niragnihi, one who doesn't do Vedic rituals, and akriyaha literally means one who doesn't act. But what kind of actions are we talking about? Sri Shankara says, tapo danadikam. Acts of austerity, acts of charity, religious acts. So one who doesn't do Vedic rituals, akriyahacha, or one who doesn't do any kind of religious acts or duties whatsoever, Sri Krishna says, that person is not a sannyasi and a yogi. We need this again. That person is not a sannyasi and yogi, talking about this third kind. Why? Because a person who doesn't do Vedic rituals, now, of course, in modern times, almost no one does Vedic rituals. At the time of the Bhagavad Gita, it was a normal part of life. It was part of your duty. So if you didn't do the normal, you know, today we have other rituals. What kind of rituals? I don't know. Reading the newspaper. No, better yet, checking your email. How's that? These are our modern rituals. Checking your email is a modern ritual. So what would you think of someone who fails to do their normal rituals, and in particular, someone who also fails to do any religious actions? We're talking about someone who's neglecting their duties, right? Someone who has turned their backs on their duties. Who are we talking about? This first category is sannyasi, the dropout, the one who's simply irresponsible and drops all of their duties and responsibilities. Now we can see what Sri Krishna is saying. Sa sannyasi sa yogi. That person is a sannyasi and a karma yogi. The one, talking about this third category, the one who is not dependent, the one who renounces, in a manner of speaking, dependence on the fruits of action. That person is a sannyasi. That person is a karma yogi. But not the one who abandons responsibilities like Vedic rituals, like checking your email, and abandons religious activities as well. That person is not a sannyasi. That person is not a karma yogi. So Sri Krishna here criticizing those who think that by giving up Vedic rituals and other religious things, that they're somehow transcending. He says they're not transcending anything. He suggests that they're being irresponsible. So very clearly, we're still talking about sannyasa and karma yoga, as we did in chapter 5, and it continues here in the next several verses.
Yam sannyasamiti prahur, yam sannyasamiti yogam tam vidhi pandava, yogam tam vidhi nahyasanyastasankalpo, nahyasanyastasang yogi bhavati kashchana, yogi bhavati.
Yam sannyasam iti prahuhu, iti thus prahuhu yam sannyasam. They call it sannyasa. That which they call sannyasa, prahuhu, they call. They call that sannyasa. What do they call sannyasa? Yogam tam vidhi pandava. Pandava, O Arjuna, tam yogam vidhi. That which they call sannyasa, tam yogam, that is yoga. Yam sannyasam, you can get the Sanskrit, yeah, if I just change the word order a little bit. Yam sannyasam, tam yogam. Vidhi, understand this, Arjuna. Please understand, Arjuna, that which they call sannyasa, that is the same as yoga. Now, on the surface, that would be very confusing, don't you think? Unless we had this chart up on the board where we could see that numbers 3 and 4 are karma yoga and sannyasa. Number 4 is also sannyasa. You're renouncing your independent agency. You're renouncing the fact that I can do anything, I am smart, I have my mind, I have my intellect, I have my body, and with all of these, I can do many things. Here we recognize that they're all gifts are given to me, and in that sense, there's also renunciation involved in that Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, in recognizing that it's Ishvara's blessing, not mine, so to speak. So number 3 and 4 here are forms of sannyasa, which are karma yoga. Which is why Sri Krishna here says, yam sannyasam, that which people call sannyasa, tam yogam, that is the same as karma yoga. Vidhi, understand this, Pandava, O Arjuna. Why? Na, we have to break up the words here. He asanyasta sankalpaha. He, because. Sanyasta sankalpaha. Sanyasta is a participle. It means renounced. Sanyasta sankalpaha is one for whom sankalpas are renounced. Now this word sankalpa has many meanings. And here Sri Shankara in his commentary, pala vishayaha sankalpaha. A sankalpa can mean a thought. But here it means a particular kind of thought. What kind of thought? A desire for a particular thing. Sankalpa means different things in different contexts. Here, sankalpa means a desire for a particular thing, vishaya. So, sannyasta sankalpa means one for whom desires for particular things are sannyasta, renounced. That's a good thing, right? But here we're talking about not sannyasta sankalpa, but rather a sannyasta sankalpa. When you break words apart in Sanskrit, if you're not careful, you can lose these little us that are around. And if you drop an you know that reverses the meaning of something. So if you overlook an you've got the meaning ulta, backwards. So, a sannyasta sankalpaha, one who has not renounced desire for particular objects, one who has not renounced dependence on the fruits of one's actions, for that person, na yogi bhavati kashchana, na kashchana, no such person, na kashchana, no such person who has asanyasta sankalpaha, no such person who has failed to renounce their dependence on the fruits of actions, no such person, yogi bhavati, can become a yogi. You cannot become a yogi. What is the context? Karma yogi. No one can be a karma yogi. No one can practice karma yoga without renouncing dependence on the fruits of actions, without breaking free of this constant dependence or desire for particular things. So this is some of the basics of karma yoga, and connecting the basics of karma yoga to sannyasa continues through here. Before we move on, can we just take a moment to see exactly what does that mean? What does it mean to not depend on the fruits of action? We had this discussion long ago, and see if you can, I'll give you just a few seconds just to see if you can recall, how does one actually do that? We've discussed many times that you can't just decide to give up desires. If you desire tea, you can give up drinking tea. You can't give up the desire for tea. Then how, in the practice of karma yoga, does one renounce dependence on the fruits of action? Can you answer that in your mind? You don't say it out loud. We'll have a problem. We have 100 of you giving the answer at the same time, because many of you recall our discussions. We said that if you think your happiness is dependent on fulfilling all these little desires, there's no way you can practice karma yoga. But if you understand that the happiness which you seek comes through spiritual growth, when you understand that your ultimate goal in life is spiritual growth culminating in moksha, liberation, if that is your goal, then you're not so dependent on all the little things. Let me illustrate that a little bit. That's a nice, look at this. If everything is going nicely in your life, something ironic here. If everything is going nicely in your life, and then you have a little problem, that little problem can be an irritant. Suppose there's nothing in particular going on in your life, and then you get a flat tire. Flat tire, come on, I can't have a flat tire, I have to do this, I have to get to work, blah, 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 blah. So you're really upset, you're irritated because of the flat tire. Suppose, on the other hand, it was a time of crisis. A family member was just diagnosed with a serious illness, and you're on your way to the hospital, and you get the flat tire. You'll get out of the car and take a taxi. You just leave the car there. You don't care about the car. You don't care about the flat tire because you have something more important to worry about, right? Do you get my metaphor? If everything were so nice in life, any little thing can be an irritant. can be a distraction. But when we're focused on something really important, all the little things in life stay little. Unfortunately, if we don't have a bigger vision of life, little problems become big. Please reflect on this. It's really one of the central teachings of Karma Yoga. If we don't have a bigger vision of life, that is, if our vision of life is, I want to be as comfortable as I can, I want my family to be happy and comfortable, if that's your entire vision of life, according to the teachings of Vedanta, that's a very limited, small vision of life. With that small vision of life, any little thing goes wrong can be a major source of suffering and torment to you. On the other hand, if you have a bigger vision of life, a vision of life in which spiritual growth is the main goal, with that bigger vision of life, all these little problems we encounter stay little. This is how you overcome your dependence on the fruits of action. This is how you become sannyasta sankalpaha. This is how you become free from all these little desires. All the little desires don't make any difference to you if you're really focused on the bigger goal. So this is one of the, we talked about this long ago. We wanted to reflect on this briefly here before we move ahead so that this doesn't stay kind of abstract in any sense. Now we get it. So we know that by being focused on a life of spiritual growth in this way, we gradually become less and less dependent on all the worldly things around us that we encounter all the time. All right. Moving ahead. And we'll go through these verses fairly quickly since a lot of this we've seen in quite some detail in prior chapters.
Arurukshor munir yogam harurukshir munir karma karanam uchyate karma karanam yoga rudhasya tasyaiva yoga rudhasya shama karanam uchyate shama karanam uchyate.
Actually, there's a bit of a connection here to our current subject matter.
Arurukshoho munehe yogam.
Munehe. For a muni. Now, muni can be translated as sage, but Sri Shankara, in many contexts, the muni is considered mananashila, a thinking person. Muni is anyone who thinks. And thinks means thinks properly. I mean, not just any kind of thinking. But someone who thinks properly, someone endowed with a proper intellect, who uses their mind properly, mananashilasya munehe, for such a thinking person, for that muni who is arurukshoho. In Sanskrit, it's called a desiderative, one who has a desire. Here, aruruksha means a desire for arodha, a desire to come up, and a desire to ascend, a desire to climb up. Arurukshohu munehe, for a thinking person who has a desire to climb up or ascend, to climb up. What? To ascend what? Arurukshoho yogam. To ascend to yoga. Now, we've got a real problem with this word yoga, used throughout the Bhagavad Gita. And when we use the word yoga, we really want to understand what yoga are we talking about. Just before, we had yoga meaning karma yoga in a prior verse, yogi. Meant karma yogi, one who practices karma yoga. So yoga can mean karma yoga. Yoga can mean, in fact, in the coming chapters, yoga can mean bhakti. Bhakti yoga, chapter 12, bhakti yoga. Sometimes yoga in can mean in general spiritual practice among its many, many meanings. One of those meanings of yoga is spiritual practice. Which one? Karma yoga? Bhakti yoga? What is the title of the chapter we've just begun studying? Dhyana yoga. And if you look at Sri Shankara's commentary, he makes it very clear. This one is Dhyana yoga. How do you know what meaning of yoga to use in a particular place? The answer is context. So we have to understand it according to the verse that we're studying. So in this context, yoga here means dhyana yoga. So here then, Sri Krishna is referring to arurukshohu munehe, those thinking people who want to come up in yoga, in dhyana yoga, in meditation. Those thinking people who want to be accomplished in meditation, those, simply put, those who want to learn meditation. That's to paraphrase that first line. For those thinking people who want to learn meditation, a translation here, cultivate yoga, that's good. For those who want to master meditation, karma karanam uchate. The karanam, the cause, the aid with which they learn meditation, uchyate, it's called, it is said to be karma. Karma here means what? Karma yoga. So what is being said here? Karma yoga is the karanam, the means or cause for those who want to learn meditation. Let me make it, in fact, this is what we talked about in our, we talked briefly in our meditation session this morning, and that is that this chapter 6 on meditation follows chapters 3, 4, and 5. Now, that's not just a matter of numbers. Yes, chapter 6 must necessarily follow chapters 3, 4, and 5, but there's a significance to it. Chapters 3, 4, and 5 are on karma yoga and sannyasa. Those topics are taught before meditation. What is the implication? That karma yoga and sannyasa are necessary for the sake of meditation. Otherwise, why not put chapter 6 elsewhere? Put it before chapters 3, 4, and 5. Can't be before 3, 4, and 5 because 3, 4, and 5 dealing with karma yoga and sannyasa are necessary to prepare you for meditation. That's exactly what we talked about earlier in our meditation session. And that's exactly what Sri Krishna is saying in this verse. He says, karma karanam uchyate. The karanam, the cause, the means by which a muni, a thinking person, can get aruruksha, advancement in yoga, in meditation. The means for learning meditation, or we could say the preliminary, the prerequisite for learning meditation is what? Karma. And here karma means karma yoga, means being engaged in worldly activities with a prayerful attitude. Everything, we've talked about karma yoga so much. How can that be so? Well, again, we talked about this a little bit in the meditation session. Let me take up a little different thing. To meditate requires a mind that's not being pulled elsewhere. You've all had the experience of sitting down to meditate, and the mind doesn't want to be focused on meditation. The mind has its own plan. It has its own desire. You want to meditate. Your mind wants to do something else. What can you do? This happens. You want to meditate. Your mind doesn't. Your mind wants to do this or that or the other thing. Your mind is driven by desire. Your mind is pulled by desire. Your mind is pulled away from meditation by desires. In order to meditate, your mind should be free from the pull of desires. How to become free from the pull of desires? Isn't that what karma yoga is about? Isn't that what we just talked about? Yes. How to become free from the pull of desires? Practice karma yoga. Learn, first of all, learn what is karma yoga and then practice. karma yoga. Through the practice of karma yoga, you become free from raga dvesha, you become free from the pull of desires, and to the extent you're free from the pull of desires, to that extent your mind can meditate without being pulled away. So now we understand these expressions can seem a little cryptic, right? So if you just get the literal meaning, for those who want to cultivate meditation, karma is said to be the means. What do you mean, karma? Now we understand. Karma yoga is the means for those who want to learn to meditate. Karma yoga is a prerequisite for those who want to meditate. But then what about for one who has practiced karma yoga, and as a result of practicing karma yoga, they're ready to meditate? So for that one who is, now we come to the second half, yoga rudhasya tasya eva. For one who is arudha, the one who is literally the one who has come up, arohana is to come up, arudha is a participle, one who has come up, one who has cultivated what? Yoga. And here again, yoga means dhyana, yoga, meditation. Yoga rudhasya, for one who has already cultivated meditation, for one who has begun meditating because they've already practiced karma yoga. Karma yoga has already been practiced, therefore they are yoga rudha, they're engaged in practicing meditation. So for that meditator, what is the karanam? What is the cause for their further advancement? If karma yoga is a prerequisite for meditation, what is a prerequisite for the meditator to go further? If karma yoga is a prerequisite for meditation, then what is it for the meditator that's a prerequisite for further advancement? That karanam, that prerequisite for further advancement, uchite, is said to be shamaha. Now, shama simply means quietude, being quiet. Being quiet means what? We'll see what Shankaracharya here says. Shamaha. Upashamaha. Shama means to be quiet. Upashama means to withdraw. To withdraw. Upashamaha. What do you mean by withdrawing? Sarva karmebhyaha nivrittihi. Of course, I'm smiling because we're reading Sri Shankaracharya, who's a sannyasi. So he's going to use his language, sarva karmebhyaha nivrittihi, withdrawal from all activities. He's really talking about... There are many places in Sri Shankara's commentary that he says, if you really want to come up in life, you should be a monk. You should be a sannyasi. He says it flat out. But then Sri Shankara was a sannyasi, and his students were sannyasis. So Sri Shankara was a sannyasi, teaching sannyasis. So you can imagine that there's going to be a little sannyasa bias in his commentaries. Absolutely. I mean, Sri Shankara will go so far as to say, if you don't become a sannyasi, good luck. He doesn't quite use those words, but you get the same sense. So, upashamaha, his first explanation is shamaha, upashamaha, withdrawal. For a meditator, what is the means of advancement? So we said the means to get to meditation is karma yoga. What is the means to go further? To deepen your meditation. The means to deepen your meditation, upashamaha, withdrawal. Withdrawal of what? From what? In the most direct sense, withdrawal of your attention from worldly activities. Now we're talking about not in terms of lifestyle. To withdraw from worldly activities means to take the lifestyle of sannyasa. But we're talking about meditation now. At the time of meditation, this is a funny way of putting it, at the time of meditation, we are all sannyasis. true. If we understand sannyasa as a lifestyle, to be completely withdrawn from worldly activities, then when you sit to meditate, and when your meditation is successful, you completely withdraw from all worldly activities. At the time of meditation, you are a sannyasi. The only difference is you're not wearing this cloth. But in a not figuratively, but literally, at the time of meditation, you are a sannyasi. You are upashamaha. You have withdrawn your attention from all worldly activities. So here, Sri Krishna is making a connection. Karma yoga, in fact, he's making a connection from these chapters 3, 4, 5, and 6. Karma yoga gets you ready to meditate, and for the sake of meditation, sannyasa is also needed. Karma yoga and sannyasa are both needed for meditation. Karma yoga is needed to overcome desires. Sannyasa is needed to let go completely of any concern for any worldly activity. So in this way, karma yoga, overcoming desires that pull the mind, and sannyasa, relinquishing any intention, any attention, or even interest in worldly matters, that kind of sannyasa, both of these are essential for the sake of meditation, for the sake of dhyana. All right. That is verse 3. Then
yada hi nendriyarteshu, yada hi nendriyarteshu, na karma swanu sajjate, na karma swanu shajjate, sarva sankalpa sannyasi, sarva sannyasi. Okay. Yoga rudhastarochyate, yoga rudhastarochyate, yadahi na indriyarteshu na karmasu anushajjate. Yada, when?
When anushajjate, when one is attached, anushajjate, same word for sangha and asakti, the sense of clinging, attachment, binding. Anushajjate, when one is attached, na anushajjate, when one is not attached. Not attached to what? Na indriyarteshu, when one is not attached to indriya artha, the artha, the objects of the indriyas, of the senses, things that we see, hear, taste, touch, and smell around us, all the goodies of life. So when one is na anushajjate, when one is not attached, indriyarteshu, to all the goodies of life, and one is when one is na anushajjate, not attached, karmasu, towards actions which will get you all the goodies of life. When one is not attached to the goodies of life, and one is not attached to the efforts or actions that will get you the goodies of life, and we just discussed a moment ago, how does one overcome that attachment? We said one of the main principles of karma yoga is to raise our vision, to understand that by pursuing all the goodies of life, what do we get? You get the goodies of life. And that's all. You get the goodies of life, which means little moments of happiness. And that's true. We work hard in life. We do the karmas. We go after the indriyartas. That is, we do the actions and we pursue all the goodies of life. And what do we get? We get the goodies of life and we enjoy them. How much enjoyment do they give us? You enjoy something for a while and pretty soon it's no longer a matter of enjoyment. Any enjoyment we have, the term that Sri Shankara uses, kshanika. All the things we enjoy in life give us only momentary enjoyment. Or worse, they give us things that we get for the sake of enjoyment become sources of suffering. And this is one of the ironies of life. Let's give an example. How about this? Someone who really wants a vacation home. They have a nice home here in New Jersey, and they want a vacation. Actually, nowadays people don't do this, but decades ago it was common. Lots and lots, even today, many people have a vacation home. So suppose someone wants a vacation home. So which means you spend a moderate amount of money for this home on a lake. You buy this home on a lake. So you've invested tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy this home on the lake, and you think that home on the lake is going to be a source of happiness. Two problems. One is, how much time are you actually in that vacation home? Nowadays, I think the modern equivalent is people will buy condominiums in some fancy place. You know, they'll buy a condo in Atlantic City, I have no idea why, or Las Vegas or something, Miami, all these places. Silly. But suppose people do that. So you buy this vacation home, you buy this condo. First problem is, how much time do you spend living in that thing? Not much. So it's already a very limited source of happiness. But then you get further problems. If you have a vacation home on the lake, in the middle of winter, it gets so cold, one of the pipes freezes. And then when it thaws a little bit, then it starts leaking. And the leaking pipe floods your living room, spoiling the carpet, spoiling the furniture, spoiling the drywall. Everything gets ruined because of this pipe. Is that a source of happiness? That which you bought for the sake of happiness, at best, gives you momentary happiness, and at worst, becomes a source of unhappiness. And even though I've used this one particular example, you might agree that that would apply to good many things. And if you'll forgive me for using kind of a tough example, many of you raise families because you want your family to be a source of happiness. Does it always work that way? No doubt your family is a source of happiness sometimes, but at least occasionally, your family becomes a source of much suffering. That's the way life works. I'm not saying, this is not to suggest that it's bad or wrong, but if we ignore this fact, we're being pretty dumb to ignore a fact staring us in the face. So here, to acknowledge that all worldly enjoyment, two things. First, it's kshanika. It at best gives us moments of happiness. And secondly, sometimes it may actually become the source of unhappiness. When you recognize that fact, you become na anushajjate. You no longer are attached indriyarteshu towards the goodies of life, and karmasu towards the actions intended to get those goodies. In this way, one becomes sarva sankalpa sannyasi. One becomes a sannyasi, a renouncer. Which kind? 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5? Sarva sankalpa sannyasi. Sankalpa, desire. Sarva sankalpa, all desires. We're still talking about this one. Sarva sankalpa sannyasi. One who has renounced karma dependence on the fruits of action. Here, sarva sankalpa sannyasi. One who has renounced sarva sankalpa, all desires. You renounce all desires when you recognize that anything and everything in life is going to give you momentary happiness and moments of unhappiness. So that person, that wise person, sarva sankalpa sannyasi, renouncing all desires, yogarudhaha, tada uchyate. The sentence began, yada, when. When one overcomes all attachment to the goodies of life and the efforts to achieve those goodies, tada, then, uchyate. That person is called. That person is called yogarudha. Advanced in yoga, someone who has cultivated yoga, someone who is ready for meditation and further spiritual growth. Notice that the introduction to this chapter 6 on meditation is talking about the importance of karma yoga and sannyasa. Karma yoga for the sake of managing your desires, sannyasa for the sense of turning away from worldly pursuits and turning towards spiritual pursuits. Only with karma yoga and sannyasa will one ever become yogarudha. Here yoga means meditation again. So only with karma yoga and sannyasa does one become yogarudha, ready for meditation and further spiritual growth. So these are the opening verses of chapter 6, and we'll continue with this chapter then when we meet next week. A couple of important announcements. Many of you know that we lost a dear friend and student, Kishan Kripalani, some days ago. We have a memorial service for Kishan Kripalani here at our ashram at 5:30 today. So if you'd like to come, 5:30 p.m. today here in this hall, we'll have a memorial service for Kishan Kripalani. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have our program for children at 11. The 6 p.m. satsang we've canceled tomorrow, so there'll be no satsang tomorrow at 6. The following week, however, we haven't sung for a while, so we'll have some singing, probably a musical meditation a week from Sunday. The library will be open after class, and we'll conclude with our prayers.